Welcome to Strong Tower Radio Today. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect the views of Strong Tower Radio, West Central Michigan Media Ministries, or its employees.
Hello and welcome to Strong Tower Radio on location. It was once said, if Mohammed won't come to the mountain will come to Mohammed. Well, our guests didn't come to Strong Tower Radio, and Strong Tower Radio didn't go to Maranatha Volunteers International in their California headquarters, but we have met in the proverbial middle, Grand Rapids, Michigan, for a Maranatha rally. We caught up with this leadership team, and we have a special opportunity to hear from this quorum of experts. I think you will enjoy this program. You got to know Don and Laura Noble in the broadcast just a short time ago by phone. This time, Don and Laura are here in person for a comprehensive view of this ministry. Welcome back, Laura.
Yes, thank you, Tom.
And Don.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
I'm so glad to have you here on the program. Would you take just a moment to introduce two of your team here, and then we'll have a word of prayer.
Yes, I have two of my colleagues here. Kyle Feese is our Vice President for Projects, and Karen Godfrey is our Vice President for Advancement.
Good afternoon, and it's good to be here.
Thank you so much. We're happy to be here.
Let's have a word of prayer. Our great Heavenly Father, it's wonderful to be with people who are uplifting the kingdom of God by supporting. Lord, you know, Aaron and Hur held up Moses' hands as Joshua fought the battle. And this organization is holding up the those who are preaching the gospel message. Be with us as we share this to the amazing ministry that has proved by the test of time, and maybe an opportunity for our listeners to join them at some time in some place. In Jesus' name, amen. Don and Laura, I think we should hear Laura's perspective of how this organization started. We heard about yours. So Laura, tell us, our listeners, that we did this earlier interview, but our network continues to grow. We probably have one more radio station, and listeners are tuning in and out all the time. Tell our listeners where Maranatha Volunteers International started from and where you are today.
Well, Maranatha Volunteers International started right here in Michigan, beautiful state, and it started with a photographer, as one would expect any construction company to start, right? And he was out photographing resorts in places like the Bahamas and Bermuda and beautiful areas. And he was a Seventh-day Adventist churchgoer. And when he went to church on Saturday, he was constantly baffled by why would anyone come to a church that looks like that?
So you're in resort areas, but he still wanted to worship with the people of God. So he went to the church, was probably off resort, I assume.
For sure off the resort. In fact, in a sense, way off the resort because of the nature of those churches. Just kind of put together like a kid's project, you know, and he just couldn't believe that people would come and worship in these buildings where if the termites quit holding hands, everybody was going to get hurt. And so he went back to Michigan and he said, we got to do something. I mean, and you got to hand it to the guy, right? A lot of us are like, wow, that's really terrible. And then we go back for like, what's for lunch, you know? And this
what
guy,
what can we do about it?
Yeah,
I'm
just a photographer. What can I do? Forget it, you know? But he went back and determined that he was going to do something about it. And he had some friends, and they all happened to be pilots, and they loaded up these planes, just a handful of families. They loaded up their own private personal planes. Now, this is an interesting side story, he had five beautiful daughters. And they were at that age where they were looking at the guys, and they were all dating.
Okay.
So he had some ulterior motives, like, hey, who are these guys that are dating my five beautiful daughters, and let's see how they do if we try to build a church.
Put them to a test.
What kind of guys are they? And so this was...
As any good father would do.
As any normal, rational father would do. And this was really the beginning of Maranatha Volunteers International. In a sense, it was a family project. And it was a bunch of families. They didn't, I don't know if they really expected to have fun. It was just kind of a test. Maybe some people thought, well, I have to do this because Dad says I have to do it. But the long and short of it is, they had so much fun that when they came back, they said, let's do this again next year. And that was the beginning of Maranatha.
Wow, Don, she told that story a little different than you did the last time, but I like her version.
Well, she brought in the zinger, you know, the five beautiful daughters part of it. I didn't have that part. You know, the other piece that's kind of interesting is John was a pilot, as she mentioned, and he went to all these different places. And so Maranatha actually started under the name Maranatha Flights International because every project was a flight. And these pilots, mostly contractors, would take other people and they travel to different parts, Central America, Caribbean, nice places where they could go and make a difference. And they did. They made a difference.
Yeah, let me just back up. And I didn't ask the question earlier. Explain what these churches looked to. I mean, they were probably made out of sticks and palm fronds and stuff. Is that the picture, right?
I think that is right. I wasn't on those early projects, but I can tell you what they look like now.
Okay.
As we've expanded, in fact, Maranatha now has worked in 89 countries around the world. And so those small planes that were taking the groups, the pilots flying them out, that doesn't work so well when you're flying from Michigan to, let's say, India or Zambia or any of these places that get to be a little far away for a small plane.
The range of those planes don't quite make it that far.
No, so everything changed, and it's grown.
But I will have to say, when you're asking what did the churches look like, the churches that we are replacing many times still look like four or five poles with like a piece of plastic tarp over the top of them. And you got to hand it to these people why they come back every week. It's they're devoted to God and nothing else. But it's not a place where you're going to invite someone else. I mean, it's embarrassing to hunker in and get down there in the heat and the swelter the way those churches are built right now. So.
And many times the children's classes are held outside the structure, in the open air and subject to the weather.
Well, yeah, and you know, we started building schools too. In fact, we do almost as much in the arena of education as we do in the area of churches. So.
Well, give us the...
In addition to that, I don't know if we covered this before, but we also drill a truckload of wells every year and maintain those wells. So I know Karen and Kyle will also be talking about that.
Yeah, we want to talk how do you maintain those wells. But give the big, big picture. How big is Maranatha? We talked about 89 countries, but what about how many church buildings, school buildings, and whatever is needed?
Well, as far as the need, I don't know exactly what that is. We've had as many as 20 or 30,000 requests at a time. But right now, we've, I think, just passed the construction of about 10,000 churches that we've done in the 56 years since we've started. And 3,500 schools, Karen? Would that be about right? Classrooms. And all told, about 20,000 projects.
That's absolutely amazing. Now, what we're wanting to do here, Don, is we've brought in Kyle and we have Karen here. Will you bring out, help me in the interview, how important, Karen is the VP of Advancement. We know that's another word for money.
Yeah.
but Kyle is the VP of Projects. I'm going to ask a question and you do some follow-ups. Kyle, what do you do? I assume your job is kind of behind the scenes months in advance. And what is the profile, if there is? What is the secret recipe, if you will let our listeners know, of the success of Maranatha? How do you do it? Is there a standard operating procedure?
Well, the secret recipe behind Maranatha and the success of sending volunteers all around the world to build is prayer. And that's something that we have a big rock in our boardroom that reminds us.
Rock.
It's a physical piece of granite. It's a big piece of granite. And it's there to remind us that God has led us in the past, and we can see that so clearly in the 56 years that Maranatha has existed, and we can trust that he'll continue to lead us in the future. But along the way, while trusting, we need to pray for that guidance and that wisdom, and there are so many complications. We can't do this on our own. We're not smart enough to pull all of this off, but with a firm trust in God and in trusting all these volunteers to God's leadership, it has been successful. So that's the secret sauce. But Maranatha has been able to not only build with volunteers, but we have teams of workers that are in each country that we operate. And so there's a lot of construction that's happening along the way while volunteers come in and out to help the process.
So what you're saying is that you have infrastructure, you have some key backbone people, especially if you're in a certain area where you're doing multiple churches, that each one of those projects starts on time and flows well.
So Maranatha is a responsive ministry to the Seventh-day Adventist Church, which means that we sit down with the leadership of a church, the regional leadership.
You're just not, I feel like building a church.
Exactly. We just don't say, oh, I'd like to go to the Bahamas to go on a vacation. We don't do it that way anymore. We sit down with the leadership and we say, what are your needs? What are your overall? What's the big picture? What would you like us to address? Churches, schools, water wells. And then we try to take a comprehensive approach to trying to help as much of that as we can. And a part of that is how many volunteers can come and be involved, how the donors are interested in that region and in what's happening in that place. And so we do as much as possible. But to do that, in these main countries that we operate in, we have a team that's based there. So we have a country director, we have construction leaders, we have volunteer coordinators. And so we have that presence, and it's an ongoing presence in that country. And then the volunteers come in and out as they can according to their schedules.
So,
Kyle, just to give the level, like the scale of what we would typically do in a country, let's say like Mozambique or Malawi or Kenya, can you help the listener? Like, what are we talking about? Five churches, one school? I mean, what kind of what's the scale of what we do there?
So Laura's referencing Southern Africa, and the region of the regional church leadership in that part of Africa approached us and asked us to start to meet some of the needs country by country. So we started in Mozambique, and we built over 800 churches. We drilled 750 wells, and we built a number of large schools. Then we moved to Malawi, where we built almost 1,000 churches and a number of schools also. Then we moved on to Zambia. We also then worked in Zimbabwe. We've worked in Angola. And then we've come back to Zambia. So we've worked in since 2006, 2007. We've been working in the southern part of Africa in that region, responding to the needs of the division, that the regional church leadership there, as they've presented those requests to us.
Kyle, we've been in Kenya for a little while. Do you have a feel for roughly how many buildings we've done in the country of Kenya?
So we've built over 1,000 churches in Kenya. We've built a number of really big, large school campuses in Kenya, and we've drilled a lot of water wells. And we started working there in 2016 at the request of the regional leadership in that part of Africa. That's known as the East Central Africa Division. And they asked us to start working in Kenya. Well, we haven't left Kenya yet. Part of that is because volunteers love to go there. They not only can have a really nice volunteer experience with meeting local people, local members, but there's a lot of animals and different, you know, interesting safaris that they can take. So it's kind of a unique,
win-win.
Yeah, it's a unique destination for volunteers. They like to go there.
I think maybe Karen can give us a little more insight into the volunteer aspect. Karen's been with us a lot of years, and she's actually run a lot of projects in a lot of parts of the world, so she's not just speaking from sitting behind a desk.
So I could just dovetail off of what Kyle's talking about for Kenya. Kenya is one of the places. Kenya and Zambia probably have been an area in that part of the world where we have had so many volunteers that have wanted to participate.
Do they ever want to go back?
Yes, many people go back multiple times. And I think probably what drew people originally back in 2010, we did something in Livingston, Zambia. Of course, that's where Victoria Falls is. And, you know, people are like, oh, I get to see Victoria Falls. But one of the things that's so wonderful about Maranatha and the volunteer experiences, they will go for one reason, maybe. Maybe that reason is, I've never been to that part of the world, or I want to see animals, or I want to see Victoria Falls. But something happens when they're there. Their lives are changed because they have seen a different part of the world. They have seen how people live. They have seen miracles that maybe they don't see at home. They seem to just be more in touch with their creator, so that when they come home, it's like, wow, that was a life-changing experience, and they want to go again and again. Maybe not back to Zambia, but maybe to Peru or Dominican Republic. And because of that, most people come back on a project. You know, there's very few people that come back and say, I mean, almost none come back and say, oh, I would never do that again. So we have got volunteers this year working in 8 or 9 different countries. We have India, we have Kenya, we have Zambia, Dominican Republic, Brazil, Paraguay, Peru, United States, yes, United States. And a lot of people don't think that we do anything in the United States, but we have got a large number of projects. In fact, this year alone, there's 22 different projects here in North America. So the experience, if somebody wants a volunteer experience in North America, they basically get themselves to that location, and they are taken care of by the host organization. Their food is taken care of, their lodging. A lot of times people bring an RV and stay in the RV, but they are taken care of during their time there in exchange for their labor. And internationally, people pay to go, and we have a participation fee, and they get themselves there and all that. So it works a little bit differently between North America and international projects.
Karen, explain how they sign up to start with.
Sure. So to see what is available, the best place to go is our webpage, maranatha.org, and click on volunteer, and then a list will, you know, drop down box with all these locations that they can go. And now you'll see something on the website that'll say closed or open. Closed simply means it's a group coming from someplace and they're doing maybe their own thing from a church or a school. It doesn't mean we're excluding people. It doesn't mean that at all. It simply means they've got their own group. But we have what we call open teams, and those are open to anybody. They just look at that project. If it's interesting to them, they apply for it, and then we give them all the information that they need.
Karen, I feel like I need a specific skill. Do I need to know how to lay block or brick before I go?
You do not. In fact, there's people that are concerned because they don't want to lay block, you know, don't feel they have the strength for that. There's multiple things that can be done on a project. Some people sift sand. Some people simply just strike the block. They lay the mortar. They do something with the children's ministry, because a lot of times there's various outreach activities that happen on a Maranatha project. And if you don't know how to lay block and you want to learn, we'll teach you how to do that.
What if I'm a medical professional and I want to do something like that for God? Is there an opportunity for me?
Yes, there is. Not every single project has a medical component, but many times if we have medical personnel coming, they like to take the responsibility to hold a clinic, and we will support them in that. And many times, whether it's dental, medical, health education, whatever, there's ways to serve in that area as well.
Well, Kyle and Karen, as well as Laura and Don, believe it or not, our first segment is already done.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
So we're going to have to take a little break, and we'll come right on back. You're listening to Strong Tower Radio on Location with Tom Majeur in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Maranatha Volunteers International. We'll be right back.
The Bible and God's character are under attack like never before. Here at Strong Tower Radio, we are proud to hold up the Bible as a lamp unto our feet and a light unto our path. We believe the Bible is the Word of God and contains the good news of God's character and His great plan of salvation for mankind. If you know and believe this to be true, won't you help Strong Tower Radio proclaim the truth about our God and His Word, the Bible? To do that, go to www.strongtowerradio.org, and there, on our secure website, you will find a donate button. Click on that and give as the Lord directs. Thank you for listening and supporting Strong Tower Radio, where God's character is proclaimed.
We're back with Strong Tower Radio on location in Grand Rapids, Michigan, with the Maranatha Volunteers International Rally. And we have Don and Laura Noble and a whole team of people here. Don is my co-host, and we had one person join us. And so, Don, I want you to introduce them.
Yes, we've added one person. It's our Chief Operating Officer, Kenneth Weiss. He's been with us for almost 30 years, so he's been in a lot of places around the world, and he'll have some good things to share.
Yeah, and it's awesome to be here in this part of Michigan. Right now, it's the fall, and the leaves are starting to turn, and we don't get that kind of weather where we are.
And, you know, between this and June are the two best months of the year, unless you're a snow sport. Then that's another story. But we have three best times of the year here. But Kenneth, there's a couple areas that we would like you to talk about. One is wells. What's the big deal about wells?
Well, yeah, we were going to have Kyle talk about wells, and Kenneth is going to talk about school. Let's start with wells. Is that okay with you, Tom?
That's fine with me. You're the co-host.
Kyle, share a little bit about the well program that we have.
Well, in about late 2010s, we were...
This is late in your history, almost.
In about 2008, 2009, 2010, we were involved in Mozambique, and it became very evident that our employees, our leaders there, were getting word back to us that as they were building churches, they were seeing this monumental need for water. And that's a need that exists all throughout Africa, as well as other parts of the world also. But our first exposure to it really in a way that impacted us deeply was in Southern Africa. And so we got involved in a project there to drill about 750 wells in total.
That's a serious well drilling operation.
Yeah, it was pretty big. And it was very successful in that a lot of people got access to water that didn't have it before.
What was the, give me an idea why this is so important and what would be a typical, what it was before and after.
Yeah, definitely. So in many parts of the world, people don't have access to clean water or sometimes not even any ready access to water at all. And so often the task falls to the women and the girls to go fetch water from the closest place possible. Sometimes that might be a stream. Sometimes that might be a river. Sometimes that might be a hole that's dug down into a dry riverbed. Sometimes there might be a shallow well that had been drilled there at some point in time, but the water is dirty and contaminated. And so
just because you have water doesn't mean you can drink it.
Yeah, exactly. And so what happens is that people get sick. The women and the girls have to spend much of their day, sometimes their entire day, hiking long distances for water. Sometimes we've heard of miles in each direction that people have to walk each day to get a equivalent of maybe about 5 gallons of water. And that's heavy.
And that's,
that's
no fun.
Really heavy.
That's 40 pounds.
Exactly. And they have to often carry it on their head. And so you can start to get a picture of
it's
this
grinding.
Process. Yeah, it's very grinding. It's wearing. And that water's precious, but even then it's not often clean. And so if you can introduce clean water into a village, oftentimes up to 500, maybe more, 750 people can get access to clean drinking water in a very timely way. So suddenly people have, particularly the women and the girls, have a chance to maybe go to school. They can actually perhaps grow a garden. They can do some other things that can help to broaden their life in a way that wasn't possible otherwise.
Could I say that is a game changer?
Absolutely. It's a huge game changer. And not only from the standpoint that they can have more time, but also they're healthier, right? Because they have an adequate amount of water, adequate quantity. Their brain works better. They're healthier, but also they're not being introduced to that disease all the time that they were getting in the contaminated water.
I just want to say there's one other issue with the women. If you know that there's a truckload of women going down to the same water hole every day, and you're a predator of any kind, whether it be a human being or an animal, you've got easy pickings. You know, they're compromised with 40 pounds of water on their head.
you're on slippery rocks. You're going many times up and down a steep ravine.
People could get injured.
Easily get injured, easily get killed. Kyle, we have some stories about people who have gotten injured.
So we've heard a few recently, some in Zambia, some also in Kenya. Just as we've been drilling, we've encountered these actual stories of people that were trying to fetch water from the river, and all of a sudden a crocodile comes out of the river and goes after their arm, or in some cases, you know, there's been fatalities, but oftentimes they'll be maimed and for the rest of their life, and they're not able to work or to function as they were before. And that's just the reality of having to try to fetch water in that way. That's, you know, the river stories are pretty common, where they suddenly are attacked by an animal. And imagine having to trade off the idea of needing water with the potential of getting, you know, injured in a really serious way.
So Kyle, do you ever run into a dry well? And how deep typically do we have to go to get fresh water? Because we're doing deep water wells.
Yeah, and so that totally depends on where we're drilling. In some parts of particularly, say, in Zambia, we're not having to drill much further than 50 meters.
Meters are yards plus.
Yeah.
So that's 150.
A little more than 150 feet. That's typically the average kind of that we find in Zambia. In Kenya, we often have to go up to 1,000 feet, 750 to 1,000 feet.
How do you drill a well that deep?
So there's experts that have the right equipment for that. Not only is the depth an issue, but also the makeup of the geology. So
is it sand? Is it sandstone? Is it quartz, rock, whatever?
Yeah, so in Kenya, there's a lot of granite. So that's hard, and there's a lot of tooling that's necessary to be able to get through that.
Too.
Yeah, exactly. It wears it down. So you go through a lot more expense in order to, not only is it the depth issue, but it's also you're going through this really hard medium. In Mozambique, for example, and in parts of Zambia, it was much more sandy. And so it goes quicker, it's easier on the equipment, that type of thing, and it's more shallow. But there are many different varieties of geology that we encounter. Sometimes, as Don mentioned, we encounter a dry well, and there's no way of really knowing ahead of time what air in the general area that you're at, unless you start to do some surveys to try to determine what the chances of hitting water are. And so we try to do that as much as possible. And sometimes we're successful with those surveys, and sometimes the surveys are wrong. Sometimes the survey will say there's no water there. Sometimes the survey will say there is water there, and you go down deep and you can't find it. And in fact, there's even some stories where the surveys said, well, we shouldn't drill, but we decided to try to drill, and we had some positive results. And I think Don has a story about that.
Well, we were starting to build a school for some girls in Kenya. And we decided that we wouldn't continue to build that school because it was a very, very dry area. They were having to spend way too much money just to truck water in. And it didn't make sense for us to build a big school if they could not have access to good water. And everybody told us it's a joke to try to drill because there won't be any water. And we decided to go ahead and give it a shot. I mean, we went through all the procedures, and we were told that there's one place on the property that you have a really long shot if you go really deep and you'll get a little bit of water. So the girls that were at that school, and they were at that time they were all girls, they decided to start praying. And so I prayed and prayed. I don't know how long it was, a couple months. And I was there, I think Kenneth may have been there. Were you there, Karen?
Mm-hmm.
When we brought the truck in to drill.
The rig.
And everybody gathered around and had a prayer. And the girls were jumping up and down, yeah, we're going to have water. And the volunteers in the United States weren't so sure.
Okay.
As you can imagine.
They were doubters.
They didn't have quite as much faith as the girls over there did. But they started drilling at about 2 or 3 meters, they hit solid granite.
That's not good.
No. But we had the equipment to drill through it. So they went ahead and drilled. And they drilled, I think they got down to 60 meters the first day, dry as a bone. The next day they drilled, it was about 80-some meters, I think it was, when the guy says, I think there's a little something going on here. I'm not sure what it is.
A little moist residue.
Yeah, it was around 90 meters. About 90 meters, they hit what they call a gusher.
A gusher.
Unbelievable. And we've built a big school there. We've added secondary school to it. There's, 300-400 kids there now, all the water they want.
Oh, man.
And so, you know, the Bible talks about water coming out of a rock.
Yes.
We think that's just a Bible story. It's not just a Bible story. It's a current story, and we've seen it happen.
Absolutely.
When you look around in that village where Don is talking about where they hit that gusher, everything in that village is a beautiful tan color.
Why is that?
Because it's just dry. I mean, it's just dust. It's the roads are tan, the streets are tan, the buildings are tan. Even the trees are tan because they're covered with dust. Everything is tan. Yeah. And when we hit that, it wasn't 24 hours, and everybody in that village knew they hit water. They hit water. Like, everybody wants water in that area. I mean, it's just dry, you know? And then we hit water. And it really says something about that school was for girls that were escaping FGM and early childhood marriage. And they have nowhere to go. And I believe
it's their sanctuary.
That is their only sanctuary. That is their home. And we couldn't expand it. We couldn't build it any larger.
Water was the
limiter. In good conscience, because there's no water. You know, you're just building another sanctuary for them to die in, something that looks different than where they were before. And I felt like, and I think everybody else felt this way too, God was saying, they've had enough.
Amen.
They've had enough. And they totally expected God to answer their prayer, and he did. And my faith was strengthened, and I believe a lot of people looked at that and were like, you know what, God, I need to have a little more faith in you.
Amen.
You know.
I want to just touch on a little bit more here with Kyle, just the significance. We, especially here in Michigan, we got water all around us. But when you have water, it's like turning on the electricity when they had no electricity. When you have water, it's almost overnight. And what you said, everything seemed to turn green from that moment on. Because once you start irrigating, that desert, whether you be, there's parts of this world that if you irrigate, that's called California, isn't it?
But careful.
But game changer once again.
Yeah, we just got some pictures of a location in Kenya where we had drilled a well a couple years ago, and one of our team members happened to be going back through that village. And so what they saw was a lineup of jerry cans, plastic jerry cans, and oil, vegetable oil cans and things like that. That's what they put their water in. Those cans were lined up for a long ways, and there was a big crowd of people, and they were waiting their turn to pump water. And the people told our employee that is the standard, that's what the standard operating procedure every day. There's a long line of people there. And they are pumping from sunup to sundown. And because it's a game changer, because now suddenly they have water accessible to them. And they don't have to hike for 5 miles or 6 miles or 8 miles in one way in order to get water. And so it's hard for us, like you said, to imagine the real impact, but it's huge. And one of the things about that that is a reality is that as that pump gets used 20 or say 12 hours a day, all day long, just constant from one person to the next, it can wear out. And so there are across Africa many water wells that have been put in by many organizations that no longer work. Maranatha,
one and done.
Right. So as we've been drilling, we decided that we wanted the outcome of Maranatha's wells to be different. We want them to be operating for as long as possible. And so we have teams in all the countries that we're drilling who are responsible for well maintenance. And so they go from location to location to make sure that those wells are operating. Now, sometimes they have to replace the wearables. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the well is broken because of misuse or things like that. But we make sure on an annual basis, we check in with each location and make sure that the well is operating and that it's maintained, so that we can tell our donors, when you make an investment in a well through Maranatha, that investment will continue to bring water to those people in that village for a very long time. And so we feel like that's a really important thing, and we're really happy that we're able to do that.
I hear preventive maintenance. Now, Kenneth, you have something you want to share?
Here, I'll add just a little bit more to the well. I'm sitting at the edge of my seat. I'm like, okay, I got to add one more thing.
Okay.
So if you step back and even look back within a few months as to what is the impact of that well, we started tracking it, and I have the sheet of paper that I love to write all the new ways that life has changed there in that village. The obvious one is water, right? And Kyle mentioned, you're going to live healthier, you're going to get less disease, you clean your hands and so on. Well, okay, now you start growing crops. That's great. That's an obvious one. Your cattle, your goat, they have water. That's great. So now the economics is going up. But then there's some corollary things. One, that we hear village after village, there's greater peace.
Peace?
Because there's not competition for sources of water like there was before. So the violence goes down, and they're so grateful for that. How about this one? There's more time. In Mozambique, the women that were spending their days looking for water started going to learn how to read and write. Well, that's pretty fabulous. In many places, it's the kids that have to fetch the water. Well, they can have time now to actually spend going to school. So then you just keep adding it and compounding, and it's the game changer. Those are your words, absolutely.
Well, I even wonder is when somebody brings that well into, do people see the love of Christ, that somebody outside of them, that they could not do this themselves, somebody cares about them in their community?
You know, that's the really exciting thing about placing a well at the location of a church. So that's what we try to do, is where when we build a church in Africa, we try to place a well at that location. And so
or a school.
That location then, when it brings the whole village there, let's say that the church is maybe they're having a meeting, or maybe there are people there that are just taking care of the church. It gives them an opportunity to speak to their neighbors, talk to them, and suddenly they become friends.
The proverbial water cooler.
Absolutely. And it actually, we've seen this really happening quite a bit over the last couple of years, is that those churches are growing at a faster clip.
Churches with a well do better.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
We also fix other people's wells. Oh, so cool. You've got the truck.
That's the kind of the Samaritan.
You've got the
approach.
Parts. And there's
in
a
the
lot
neighborhood.
Of, yeah. Hey, we're in the neighborhood and there's a well there. Somebody spent all the money. We know there's water under there.
Yeah. If people come up and to our crew and say, oh, please, there's a well over here that's not working, there's no way we're going to drive off past that and not help them. So we do, if we encounter a well that's not working, we take a look at it and try to fix it.
So you might spend half your time fixing other people's wells.
It all changes somebody's life. So
that's right.
The main thing.
Why don't we take a break right now, and we're going to talk about schools after the break. So Kenneth gets his day in the sun. We'll be right back with Strong Tower Radio on location with Maranatha International. I sure hope you are all enjoying this conversation of these connected, caring people making a difference. We'll be right back.
Hi folks, Jelaine Fenner here. We are definitely living in uncertain times, and for some of us, it's scary. Signs of the times are everywhere. Jesus is coming back soon. Read Revelation chapter 22. Jesus says, surely I am coming quickly. We at Strong Tower Radio have a free book for you called The Great Controversy. Go to the back of the book and read chapters 35 to 42. It'll help you understand the times we're living in and what's ahead. This book even has 800 historical quotes and 1,200 Bible quotes. I love this book. Call Strong Tower Radio today, 231-468-2087, and ask for The Great Controversy while supplies last. And if we don't answer, please leave a message asking for The Great Controversy with your name, address, and phone number. That's 231-468-2087. On Strong Tower Radio, where God's character is proclaimed.
We're back with Strong Tower Radio on location. We're here in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I said in the first segment that if Mohammed wouldn't come to the mountain would come to Mohammed. We did neither. We met in a middle place, which is Grand Rapids, Michigan. Of course, that's a long ways from California, isn't it, Don?
Oh, it's not that far.
Just one plane ride.
Compared to flying to India, it's not very far.
That's right.
It's pretty close.
Well, Don, there's other parts of Maranatha Volunteers International we haven't really touched on. Schools, take it away.
Yeah, one of the very major areas that we spend a lot of time and resources on is the arena of education. We do a lot of schools.
Why is that important?
Well, you know, if you want to change the world, you know, change the kids that are growing up in that world. And, you know, start changing not just those kids, but you change their families, you change the communities. And that's part of why we build the buildings. They become a central point that gathers a community together. And
just like the Wells.
Well, it's not exactly like the Wells, but, yeah, the end result is pretty much the same. You want people to come together. You want them to grow. And for us, we actually want to see them learn more about God.
Amen, amen.
And that's
so do we.
Yeah, and so the schools that we build are Christian schools, and that brings the Christian element. You take a country like India, for example. There's some Christian there, and that's the arena that we work in.
And it's I've been to part of India. You say you've been to India. There's a big part. You've only touched a part of it, but. Education for those who want to get ahead. There is some public education, but the best schools are private schools.
Yeah, private schools in India are a big draw. People will put their children in a good school, and so that's what we try to provide. And I know, Kenneth, I was going to ask you to speak to the arena of education a little bit.
Yeah, happy to. You started. It's a great perspective. When we go and work at a country, we try to ascertain, and some of this was touched on earlier, I'm sure, about what's the need there in the country, right, for infrastructure. And education is often high on the list of the people we're talking to. And in our history so far, we're approaching 3,000 classrooms that we have built around the world. So when you look at, and these are not schools, some of them have multiple classrooms, some are campuses and so on, but when you're looking at the number of classrooms, multiply that by 40 or 50 kids, you are on the order of 100 to 150,000 students every single day learning. Well, they're learning how to read and how to write. They're learning about Jesus. And so the impact is magnified over and over and over again. I mean, that's a very large school district in the United States that we've had the privilege to build, right? So the impact of the schools is huge from an education perspective. And I was going to tag team with Laura, right? There's a number of places where the impact of a school for the gospel is really interesting. And you've got a couple examples, Laura.
I do have a couple examples. I'm going to say one example is, and I'll never forget this, we built several huge schools in the country of India, and we're still building schools in the country of India. It's a huge country. And there's a lot of kids who want to go to a private school, and a lot of parents who put that as a top priority. One of the things that really struck me, we built a school, and we stayed there inside the school walls the night before we opened the doors in the morning.
Okay.
When we finished our breakfast and we went out to the gate that was locked.
In India, a lot of times there's a fence or a wall around.
Oh, yeah.
You just don't walk in there.
You don't walk around. Yeah, exactly. And there's a lot of reasons for that. But there was a few hundred people that had spent all night. Some of them had taken a bus for a day to get there.
Wow.
These are adults with their children. They'd spent all night waiting there. I mean, Don had, several of us had grown men grabbing your feet, begging you, I just let one of my children in the school. I just want one, if one of my children can get in the school, is there any way? And they're crying, like grown men, crying at your feet. It's like, you just want to build more and more schools. You can't believe.
Say, why did I just build one? Why didn't I build two, 10, 20?
And I will have to say, why did we just build one? Because we didn't. That's what we had the money to do. And, you know, it's like that guy, you know, saving the starfish out of the ocean. Well, you know, I saved that one, right?
Yes, right.
You know, okay, we had the money to build that one. And, you know, I can't promise this guy that one of his kids can get in their school, but I pray for that. You know, I want to build a truckload of those schools. One of the little girls that went to those Indian schools, they have these standardized tests that are across the nation. That little girl was a goat herder. And there's nothing wrong with being a goat herder, but somehow her parents got her into that Christian school. And do you know that she scored the number 2 in the entire state?
Wow.
Yeah, she's just a little smarty pants. And she's going somewhere. She's got a head on her shoulders. And what if she hadn't have been able to go? What if that school wasn't there? Where would she?
She'd be herding goats.
Mm-hmm. She would be herding goats, which need to be herded. But she can do a lot more. So there's so many different things that happen to these children. They go back, they talk to their parents.
And just at the footsteps of that, you reminded me, right now we are finishing up a school in Pine Hill. It is in the northeastern part of India. It is very close to the border with Myanmar. So why is that interesting? Well, it turns out that due to some of the political and economic challenges in
those
the area, a lot of those borders are porous, and a lot of those children go as refugees. Well, they need to be educated because that is their one
ticket.
Chance and hope to succeed and get out of, you know, a fate that's terrible. So the schools end up being not just education. It's a whole lot more.
They're a lot. They are similar to water in that they are a game changer. They're a life changer for not just the child that goes, but for the family. And the important part of this school is not just that they learn how to read and write, and that's critical to being a meaningful member of society and having a meaningful life for you and your family, your new family to come. But what about 10,000 years from now? Where are those kids? Where is their family? I mean, God is reaching out to every child there. God is reaching out to every family there. They're not there by accident. I believe God put every single child in that classroom, and those teachers too. And those are like, I mean, who would go to an evangelistic campaign for, let's say, 8 hours a day, every day, for the rest of the year? Nobody. But you'll send your kids to the school.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's a whole Christian community that you may not or may be aware that you are joining there, and that'll change your life forever.
Another story. This summer, we were part of a big meeting that the Seventh-day Adventist Church periodically has every 5 years. And at that meeting, something interesting happened. We built a school and an orphanage in El Salvador. And this is a number of years ago. And we were there at the booth doing what, talking to people about Maranatha. And lo and behold, up came a young man from the orphanage, but we didn't recognize him at first. And I'm going to hand the microphone over to Karen right here because she came and talked to him. Just here you go. And it was a surprise.
This young man at 2 years of age was brought to the orphanage back in 1996-97. It was one of 9 children, and he was the only one that was brought to the orphanage.
Can you say, what about the orphanage? What is the orphanage?
The orphanage, well, I was just dovetailing off what Kenneth said. It was an orphanage that Maranatha built several years ago in about an hour outside of San Salvador. So when we started at the orphanage, there were 13 children. So as new buildings came up and everything, you know, people started bringing other young people in. So this young man came in at 2 years of age, and we all got so attached to him. And so After a period of time, Maranatha handed over the operations of the orphanage to another organization that specializes in that, because that is not, you know, our specialty. So we kind of lost track of this young man, and here he walks up to the booth, and we were so excited. He started to tell us, you know, I continued my education. I'm working in a Christian organization, and I want to say thank you for what you guys did, and you changed my life. None of my siblings really amounted to anything, and I owe what I became to what you all did there at the orphanage. And it was really mind-blowing, because oftentimes you don't get that feedback.
You believe that you're making this impact, but you don't know.
But you don't know. And I know that, you know, when we get to heaven, a lot of us will, you know, get that chance. But we got the chance to see
the
one
side
little
of
glimpse.
Glory.
Yes, it was really, really awesome. Great. It was
great. Yeah, when we see all these kids in the schools, you know, I always think, what is the potential here? The word, I think, is potential. You see all these kids, you know, running all over the place, and then they're sitting in the classrooms, they're learning. What can they be? What would not they have the chance to be if we hadn't built that school? So changing the lives through education is really powerful. Or the orphanage, or the wells. You know, one of the things that I was thinking is, you were talking, a question that almost always comes up is, okay, so you have all these projects that you've done. You have all these projects that they're asking you to do. How in the world do you pay for that?
Okay. Yeah.
That's a question we almost always get. So maybe just briefly, we don't ever pressure anybody to give to these projects, but they're expensive. We try to keep them as cheap, or not cheap, but inexpensive as possible. But construction internationally costs money.
It does here.
It's not cheap just because it's in Kenya. Believe me, it's not. So we are funded completely by private donations. That's it. People who
just
heart,
like Strong Tower Radio.
Just like Strong Tower Radio. Yes, that's right. It's people that believe in what's happening, the lives that are being changed, the impact that's taking place, or the volunteers that have actually gone and seen it. That's a lot of how.
A lot of your donors are those who volunteer, because firsthand, they know exactly what is being their money is going for.
Yeah, you can listen to a story and maybe be moved by it. But if you're over there and you're looking in the eyes of the people yourself, and you get to interact yourself, and you can walk those streets, you can walk into that school, you can help build that church. Wow, now there is an impact.
And you say, if we had one of these, we need 10, 5, 10, 20 more of these. I want to help with the next one.
Yeah, it's the hardest thing that we ever do is say that we
say
can't.
No.
Well, we never say no.
Okay.
We don't say no, we say wait. And sometimes the wait is a long time, because you just can't do everything. You know, you wish you could.
Yes.
But wait is usually the answer that that we give. But we do as much as we can. And it is dependent on the donations.
Well, Karen is the director of advancement, and I call that fundraising, but you say you don't raise funds, you just share needs?
Well, we do share needs, but people call us often and say,
what
you know,
can I do?
What can I do to help? We love to match their desire to help with a need. And so we spend a lot of time on the phone with people trying to make sure that where they put their money is really where they want to be involved. And so that's one of the ways we also send out. I mean, we do what other organizations do with
mailings,
direct mail and things like that. We have a television program. A lot of people hear about us through that. And our magazine goes out. And, of course, then our website is always talking about what's coming up and what we are doing in different parts of the world. But we would be more than happy to talk to you about how you want to make a difference in the world. So there's multiple ways to do that.
So Laura, can you follow up on that?
Well, we have, you were talking about our website, which is maranatha.org. And you can also just do a simple thing, like call in to Maranatha, and we can give you all the
information,
particulars all over again. And that is 916-774-7700. And that's 916-774-7700. And like Don was saying, I think really one of the hardest things that we have to do is say, wait. And especially when you know, it's someone literally crying at your feet. That is really difficult. And you think about the lives that have been changed, that God has allowed us to change. One of the girls that Don and I got really involved with was one of the little gals from that orphanage that Maranatha built many, many years ago. Her mother was a prostitute. And early on, when she was 8 years old, her mother put her into the business. Mm. And she ran away. And she was one of the original 9 kids that were found in a shed. And she didn't want to go to work, so to speak. And through going to the orphanage and getting an education, yeah, has her life been perfect? No. But today, she is a nurse. She has a master's in nursing. She's a nurse in Mexico. She has a beautiful family. And they go to church every week.
Amen.
And they're studying the Bible and, like, trying to make a better life for themselves. And I think, what would have happened? God, it's one of the biggest privileges, I think, in each person's life to be used by God. It's a bigger thrill, really, than pretty much anything I've ever experienced. And, I mean, I would encourage anyone to challenge God and say, hey, God, use me.
I tell you, one of the greatest joys, I was on another mission trip in Mexico, and I'm out there in intense heat under the sun. I was sweating. We were past doing the bucket brigade of concrete blocks, and they get heavier every one you pass.
So far, this sounds really fun.
And I said, you know what, I'm the happiest I am. Yeah. I'm happier than when I'm, this was back before Strong Tower Radio.
Yeah.
But I said, I'm happier here doing this than I am back at my day job. And
yeah,
that's why people come back to Maranatha, is they're happier in the mission field sometimes than when their day job. Let's wind this program up one more time. You've caught the interest of many, many people. Who all can go on these trips? Do you have to be Seventh-day Adventists? Do you have to be builders? Do you have to be medical people? Take it away.
Okay, you do not have to be a Seventh-day Adventist. The projects have a very spiritual component to that.
And you'll enjoy that.
And especially if you're a churchgoer, you'll enjoy having morning and evening times together as a group with worship. As far as the construction aspect, we will teach you how to be productive on a construction site. You don't have to lay the block. There's also generally various forms of outreach on a project that you can be involved in. You don't have to go as far as India. You can go right here in North America. But we have opportunities this year and into next year for India, Dominican Republic, Brazil, Paraguay, Peru, North America, Kenya, Zambia.
And what is that contact information one more time?
Okay, so you can find all that information at maranatha.org, or you could call our office at 916-774-7700. One more time, 916-774-7700. We'd love to have you part of the organization.
Well, I'm sure glad that we met halfway in the middle in Grand Rapids, Michigan, Don.
Absolutely. It's a privilege to be involved in service. And see what God is doing around the world. And when you can do it personally and not just listen to somebody else, it just makes it so much better.
Yes, do it, be involved yourself. For Strong Tower Radio, I'm Tom Majeure, on location in Grand Rapids, Michigan with Maranatha Volunteers International. Until next time, God bless. Bye now.